Okay, so the last and final presentation tonight is about the way in which transit connects to economic opportunities and jobs. Our panelists for this section are Bob Allen and Howard Nelson. So Bob works with the Transit Justice Program at Urban Habitat. In 2009, Bob helped lead a successful coalition that fought a campaign to stop the use of $70 million in federal stimulus funds for the Oakland Airport Connector Project based on civil rights violations. Bob's past work includes labor organizing with Unite, as well as organizing and advocacy with refugee and immigrant communities. Bob has been a critical player in the Free Muni for Youth campaign. He has also been a central ally in this phase of all of our work, and we really appreciate his rigorous mind and all of his support.
And Howard Nelson has been a Muni bus driver for 15 years and is an active member of the Transit Workers Union Local 250A. He has lived in San Francisco since 1957, first in the Fillmore neighborhood, and later in the Haight-Ashbury and Ingleside. Howard got involved in organizing when Proposition G was put on the ballot attacking Muni drivers. Through that campaign, he built with Power, Answer, Save Muni, and the More Public Transit Coalition. In his words, the bottom line is this: regardless of what they say about bus drivers, when you see us every day, we are everyday people just like you. We are all riding the bus together. If the drivers and the riders are connected, we will all have more power. Yeah. Give it up.
Okay, I want to start by thanking Power and a Data Center for inviting us to be part of this project. And it's been a real privilege to work with both organizations. And I especially want to thank the members of Power, who I think we all acknowledge are the real experts on mass transit and public transit in the city of San Francisco. They're the folks like Donahue and all the organizers and all the members that we learn the most from, and that really shapes our work. So I want to acknowledge how much we learn from the members and thank them. So we hear a lot, if you put the news on, we hear a lot today about budget cuts and this word austerity, right? We're broke, right? We're broke. Are we broke? Okay. In a country, we might be broke, that's true. Some of us might feel that way. In a country that spends $700 billion a year on the military, are we broke?
No.
In a state that spends tens of billions of dollars a year locking up mostly black and brown people, are we broke?
No.
In a city that gives hundreds of millions of dollars away to downtown tech companies to stay here so their employees can ride private coach buses through the city, are we broke?
No.
Okay, so we're not broke, which is a good thing. We've established that. Now we have a great way in this report how we're going to spend the money. And that's one of the really exciting things about Next Stop Justice is that we are talking about rolling out a strategy for real green jobs. Remember green jobs?
Yeah.
We're allowed to talk about green jobs. It's okay. I know they made it a really bad word. They made Van come back to the Bay Area. All that stuff happened. We can still talk about green jobs. They're here. This gentleman is an example of what a green job is, and he's going to talk to you about his experience. So, getting beyond all that nonsense about austerity, I think what we are seeking to build on is the framework that the Strategy Center and the Bus Riders Union have talked about, which is investing in transit operations, right? Investing in drivers, investing in people. And what we find is, if you look at the research that we have dug up in this report, and it's been out there, but no one's talking about, is in 2009, when the administration decided to spend money in communities on the stimulus, so-called stimulus, you know, one of the secrets is it worked. It created and maintained thousands of good green jobs. And those jobs are, when you put money into transit service, you are putting money into jobs. And when you cut transit service, you are cutting jobs. And that's why we should have such a deep solidarity between the riders and the drivers, because that investment, and men like Howard, that is an investment in putting service on the street. It's also creating sustainable jobs that can be a real source of economic development for the city. At a time when there is such a profound gap in the city of San Francisco in terms of economic opportunity, it's not a mystery. If we put more service on the street tomorrow, we will hire more people to drive the buses, to clean the buses, to fix the buses, to repair the buses. We can do that. It is not a secret. And that's what's one of the really exciting things that we uncovered kind of putting the data together and doing the review for this report. On the downside, one of the things that Howard's going to talk about is what happens when we try to scapegoat the drivers. And I think, speaking for a lot of us in this room, when we had Prop G in 2010, you know, I'm on the bus maybe 6 months ago talking to a female driver, and she's saying to me, I don't get it. You're telling me that people may not remember this, but 6 months ago the Republicans decided to get rid of the 20% when Sonny was talking about the 80% of the federal $500 billion that goes to highways. Of the 20% that goes to transit, the Republicans' idea in June was, let's get rid of all of it. All of the transit money dedicated, gone. That was their proposal in the budget. When we are faced with that kind of situation, right, and then locally we're saying to the drivers, the problem is you earn a decent wage that allows you to stay in the city for people who've been here since 1957. I know I'm not supposed to bring that up. For a while. We're telling people, you don't deserve to stay in the city. You don't deserve to have a good job. And we're saying we don't have a good economic strategy. It's another phrase we all use in San Francisco, family flight, right? Family flight, I mean, really what we mean is families getting pushed out. The families aren't flying away like birds. They're getting pushed out of the city, right? And part of the reason they're getting pushed out is they don't have a pathway to good jobs for kids who grow up in neighborhoods like the Bayview and the Mission. One of the best ways, and one of the fastest ways, and not some future project we build that's going to take 30 years of capital construction and going to give developers a lot of money, you can hire people, train them, get them into an apprenticeship program, and have them working for Muni, getting kids to school in a matter of months. Okay? So it's one of the fastest strategies we have. It's one of the most effective. We have to acknowledge when we build out a lot of the other transit projects and a lot of the construction stuff that Sonny talked about, there's historic inequities in some of the labor movement. We have to have an honest conversation about that. But we also have to realize if we look at unions like the Transit Workers Union here in San Francisco, TW 250, and we look at the leadership and we look at where those folks are from, what neighborhoods they're from, and the composition, the racial and ethnic composition, that it looks a lot more like the kind of workforce we want to build in San Francisco, right? So there's a lot of things we need to look at. And the exciting part about this report and how it's going to pick up and talk about is a clear path to building a really strong economic justice movement in the city that lines up with getting people to jobs, getting kids to school, and creating real employment opportunities. And Howard's going to talk about that as someone who's been doing that for decades now. Thanks.
Oh, good evening. How you doing? Thank Howard for having me here. For some of you don't know me, I don't know if it was some time ago, but I've been here for a while. These are remember these flyers, okay, that we were passing out there on 16th and Mission. So, you know, this ideal with the youth thing started down the street there, and I was, you know, part of that, so I'm proud of that. But I guess the best way to describe my job, rather than, because, like I say, you see me, I don't have to tell you what I do. If you ride the bus, you see what I do. So I'm going to explain it like this. It's kind of will be speaking in like redirecting valuable resources to where it's really needed and to where the communities and the people that really need it. And the best way to say that is that when I started working for Muni, their main office was at 949 Presidio, a three-story dilapidated building. Then they had another office down here, 401 Van Ness, in the Veteran Memorial Hall. Now we have the MTA, which has a seven-story building at 1 South Van Ness. When I started working for Muni, it was basically the people that were actually in charge of Muni were operators, people who had actually had driven buses and through the ranks and hard works and going through the ups and downs, got promoted and elevated to different positions, superintendent, supervisor, CEO. So it was a more like family orientated, thing there. You know, you feel like you're in a family. So what I'm trying to say is that where they're talking about they don't have any money. You know, or Muni is strapped for money. Okay, I'm under the impression that the MTA is over Muni now. So it's like me as a father telling my, you know, my kids, they live in a house, but they don't have anything they need, but I got a refrigerator full of steaks. You know, how can Muni be in trouble and the MTA just got billions of dollars for a central subway system? You know, so the point is, if where did the money come from for you to move from 949 Presidio to this seven-story building down here on Market in Van Ness? Why wasn't that those funds that you're paying lease or you bought the building and all those people that you employed up there to run this little company down here, why didn't you put that resource into the community or get a power base like power, a office or a floor in that building so that you could relate to them what resources was available? Because I don't think it shouldn't be necessary for you to have to go to Muni and ask, well, let our kids ride the bus. As much money as they're spending on the Central Subway, the American's Cup, the Trans Bay Terminal, you mean a measly, listen, you got enough money for these kids to ride buses forever. So, you know, so Prop G, what they did, they used Prop G to kind of put a wedge between us and the riders. But like I say, regardless of what you hear, everybody is human. You do have operators have a bad day. You realize most of us have to be at work 12 hours a day, not counting the commute. So we're not on the time. So when you get on there, you only have one concern, that's you. But when we're driving that bus, we have 100 people that we're responsible for, not only thinking about the bills we got to pay now too. So the point is that we're in this ride together. And, you know, so they divide us, and the legitimate opposition that they had to making this come true was the local 258, and that's why they did us the way, you know, they put on Prop G. They couldn't take the power from us, so they gave it to the people. See, through us, the people could have gotten a lot of this resources, but they put that in there because they couldn't take it. They threatened us with layoffs and cutting salaries because they were trying to give us to give up the right we had. But so what they did, they created this transition of conflict between the rioters and officers. So when they went to the polls, it went that way. So now we're fighting to get back what they actually, you know, stole from us, all of us, not just me, but from you too.